Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very senior corporate professional from Switzerland, Reshma Ramachandran. Reshma, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. As I said, it's really a privilege and honor to have this 1 hour with you.
Thank you. Reshma is the Group Senior Vice President and Head of Transformation of the Adecco Group, which is the world's second largest human resources provider. She has been recognized, awarded, and felicitated globally. So Reshma, let's start talking about the Adecco Group. Tell me about the work you do.
So the work I do, I start with what Adecco does, mm-hmm. because I'm not sure if it's a brand, it's known to the viewers. Mm-hmm. So as a brand, we cater to the entire talent pool, I would say, the different segments of the talent pool. Mm-hmm. And what we basically do is we actually create employability for this talent pool, place them. And on the other side, we actually provide the whole experience with the customers, our clients itself, so that they don't have to do all the, seeking talent and, with the talent scarce environment, seeking talent, placing them. So the entire end-to-end HR solutions for the, that caters to the whole talent. Mm. Now, what I personally do is I actually head the transformation for the strategy and transformation for Adecco. So when I say transformation, it is nothing but implementing the strategy. So our ambition with the strategy is to really disrupt the industry, the staffing industry. And we are 1 year into that journey. Come quite far, I have to say, in this COVID times. Mm. I've been 1 year with the group now.
Fantastic. So, I was thinking, when I was reading about you and doing a little research, it got me a little thinking and said, when I was in the corporate world, people used to be called headhunters. That has now evolved into the search firms. Help me understand, how has this entire business of finding individuals transitioned?
And I don't think it was too long ago, and still I think the word headhunter or the concept of headhunter still exists. Mm-hmm. But the transition has happened, I would say, somewhere in the 2010s. And this is primarily to do with the talent scarcity. Mm. So as you probably are aware, if you look at the general shelf life of skills, I am an engineer. I studied engineering. Do I use all of the engineering that I studied? No, because that skill set has considerably evolved in the past 20 years. Mm. So when we look at the shelf life of skills, it's typically now 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. This is what research says. So which also means that there is a lot of shortage for talent. Hmm. So when the shortage for talent has actually come in, and this is why I say, I think the disruption was more because of all these technology firms that came in, the Silicon Valley technology firms, all of these startups. Hmm. 2010s is when the headhunter slowly moved into the search. So what you call as a passive candidate, and then you actually seek those talents. So what is the talent that is scarce in the market? And as we go into it, COVID has really accelerated that, or I would rather say it has given us a preview into what is the world that we are moving into. Mm-hmm. Talent is going to be extremely scarce. And I think the search firms are going to play a very important, imminent role in actually shaping up their talent market.
Fascinating. And I was also talking to a few people on my show who are in the same business. And they have positioned themselves as organizations that use artificial intelligence to search people. I'd love to get your perspective on what does that mean and how are they doing? How are they any different? No names, of course.
So, technology has disrupted every sphere and aspect of our lives, right? Mm. So our industry is no different. Mm. In terms of, I come to tech first and then come to artificial intelligence in a bit. So technology has significantly disrupted the whole HR world. Mm-hmm. I don't remember, Ashutosh, when you left the corporate world. I can tell you, I started in India. And I used to work for L&T. So, in order to apply for a job, you had to get Hindu used to have these Wednesday opportunities supplement. Correct. This was where jobs used to be advertised. Mm-hmm. So it was really like you apply to a job that is advertised in print.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you had to get your next job, it had to always be that physical network.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of evolved. Now, if you see, all of the applications can happen online. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn as a platform exists. There mm-hmm. is chatbots, all of that, right? Mm-hmm. So the technology has kind of disrupted the whole HR world. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to artificial intelligence, it's more, what is artificial intelligence? It's nothing but using the human intelligence into and putting it into an algorithm and using it. Mm-hmm. So it's more a question of what is your behavior? What is the behavior that is required for the role?
Mm-hmm.
What are the skills, your skills versus what are the skills required for the role? And the more the, in quotes, quote unquote, machine learns that,
mm-hmm.
the more it actually helps you find talent better and mm-hmm. place talent better. And this is where if, to your question on what are those search firms doing differently,
mm-hmm.
I think this is fundamentally the difference in terms of, you know, what's the skills, you're able to predict the skills of the future,
mm-hmm.
you're actually able to identify the talent that actually then fits into that skills of the future.
Mm. Fascinating. One other million-dollar question that seems to be on top of everyone's mind when they get into their mid-30s is, when will I get a call from a search firm? Which means I have now arrived. I remember that used to be a big thing, and I just keep listening to my sons and all their friends and saying, oh, I've got a call from someone. And I always tell them, talk to them. But tell me, at what stage of one's career does one come onto the radar of firms like yours? Because you know, a very large percentage of our viewers and listeners are under 34.
Yeah. So again, you know, and I'm happy that you say this, you know, like you want to be called by headhunter. I was one of those people who wanted to be headhunted, you know,
okay.
You thought it was, it was something, it meant that you were arrived.
Mm.
I feel similar to different spheres of the life that we talk about. The getting the call is also probably a myth in that sense that it goes with the age. So age becomes a number, only a number in the whole talent scarce environment.
Mm.
And I wouldn't necessarily say it's an age or corporate hierarchy. It goes back to the skill. So think about, and you know, I have a 14-year-old who is extremely good at coding and programming.
Mm-hmm.
And if he would actually put out his skills in the market, he would be actually headhunted.
Correct.
So I fundamentally believe that it's the skills that actually make the difference. So it's not definitely not the age, not the hierarchy in the organization, not the titles that you hold. It's definitely the skills.
Okay. And, you know, when you start looking at getting people across skill sets, do your parameters rely primarily on my knowledge, as you said, if I'm very good at my subject, or are there more factors that are taken into consideration?
So it depends on the role. I would say for roles that needs to contribute to individual contributors, skills definitely matter. If I talk about leadership roles, you know, leadership has also evolved in the last 10 years so much, right? So it's about people are the greatest assets any company can have. So it's always about, as a leader, how do you bring out the best in people? So it's not the hard skills alone. Hard skills do matter. I don't want to undermine that. But I would say there is a lot more of focus on the soft skills. How do you actually help teams collaborate? How do you actually collaborate with suppliers, competitors, you know, the whole external ecosystem, so to say? How do you actually empathize? How do you stay humble? So the whole servant leadership. So all of this actually plays a large role when you are actually headhunting, or you want to be headhunted for leadership roles.
The other big thing, or the two big things happening in the world today, and I'd love to get your perspective, is the great resignation and work from home because of the pandemic. How is this changing the way search firms like yours function? Because there's constant demand now. People are resigning as if there's no tomorrow. And the entire profile of working from home is changing the paradigm of human resources.
That's true. So with respect to great resignation, I think it's more than great resignation. I think it's the great reshuffle, right? So it's more about, you know, you have been doing certain things. And what happened with COVID is you have started to questioning what you're doing. So really getting out of the comfort zone. Some of us can do it intrinsically. Most of us need an extrinsic motivation, and that's what COVID did. Mm. So from that perspective, I think it's beyond the resignation, it's more the reshuffle. Mm. And what work from home has really shown, especially in the countries where, you know, travel takes a large part of your day, mm. It has really shown that you really can have the balance, the famous work-life, so the most elusive work-life balance, mm. And you can still contribute. So what has changed with respect to the HR as a function mm. is also that, you know, how do you cater to employees whom you have never met, mm. whom you will probably never meet? Mm. Well, how do you create an employee experience? You know, today, just look at the two of us. If we would be doing the face-to-face conversation, probably mm. we would have caught up over a coffee before. Probably I might have invited you for a lunch after. Mm. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole dynamics is different when we are doing it virtual. So how do you create that employee experience? Mm-hmm. And I fundamentally feel, you know, where for us as a firm, mm-hmm. and we deal with a lot of our clients as well, where for our customers as well, where it's a challenge is, how do you create the employee experience so that they're engaged in what they do and they can still contribute meaningfully and productively to the whole company's purpose and vision?
Very well said. And, you know, for people of my vintage, some of the things that we had been taught was management by walking about. You know, you walk around all over your office, go and sit with someone, have a cup of coffee, or have coffee machine conversations. Now, all these are changing very, very dramatically. What will it do to the famous networking that we all used to think of within our own organizations?
Yeah, I have to say, you know, this was a fundamental change for me last year. I'm a very people person. I feel like I get so much of energy, like just meeting people, even if it is not talking, just meeting people. Mm. And all of this fundamentally changed last year, right? So the whole coffee conversations stop, what we call as a water cooler conversations, all of this dramatically shifted our perspective on networking. Mm. So this is also where I think the skills of the future, if I can put it that way, mm. is also about us getting out of the comfort zone. Mm. And, you know, I was one of those people, again, very Asian mindset, if you can put it that way. I was one of those people who were very reluctant to reach out to others mm. and actually make that connection. So I was very comfortable with these coffee conversations or water cooler conversations because mm-hmm. you're not reaching out. You are already there.
Yeah.
And this was a shift, I would say, in the networking personally for me as well that happened last year, where you have to make those steps yourself. You have to reach out. And like, you know, if I want to talk to you, I can't wait for you to reach out to me. I would have to reach out to you. So for me, what is, again, personally, being one of those people who had challenges with it, mm. I feel the definition of networking is going to change as well. And this is also where, you know, I strongly recommend platforms like LinkedIn, mm. where you already have people on the platform and it's just making that effort.
Very well said. So one more question before I move to another segment. And that is... And, you know, this would be very appropriate for you, a question for you, because he works in such an international company. How do you handle cultures across multiple countries, in large countries, across multiple states, cities, communities? You know, what goes into managing such vast cultures?
So just to put things in perspective as well, I grew up in India, I did my entire education in India, and I moved out in 2001, and I have lived in 13 countries since.
Wow.
So culture is something that I do not underestimate. Mm-hmm. And to your question, how do you manage global, and this is a challenge for all the global firms, right? Mm-hmm. How do you manage culture? And I think this is where the definition of leadership or the skill sets for leadership is changing, which is more about the empathy. So I think it's very important to understand that we are not biased with our own experiences. Mm-hmm. Your experience could be completely different. You know, if I'm dealing with someone in France, someone in Germany, to someone in Singapore, to India, to US, I think the experiences are what actually gives us that mental models. Mm-hmm. And I just need, as a leader, and I say this generally to everyone as a leader, we just need to be conscious of that, you know, you don't expect the same behavior. This mm-hmm. also brings a lot of focus on the diversity and inclusion topic, which means that, you know, it's not just having diverse workforces, it's actually how do you include them in your whole thought process. How do you actually include them in the team? And this is, again, COVID has only accelerated that in my point of view. Mm-hmm. We just need to be more inclusive.
Well said. And taking up from what you said on DEI or diversity, equity, and inclusion, you are currently sitting in developed Europe, where this is being talked about a lot and for many years, and people are actually walking the talk. What is your perspective on DEI in the lesser developed countries, including the country that you have come from?
So, you know, when you say Europe, well-developed and walking the talk, we have to also take a step back and think about it, right? You take Switzerland, for example. Women got voting rights just 30 years back. Mm-hmm. So it's not very advanced. You would think it's very advanced. It's not very advanced. You take Germany, for example, you know, there is a mandate now from the government that 30% of the boards have to be filled with women. Mm-hmm. Still, we are still talking about one segment of the demographics of diversity.
Correct.
So the whole thought process in Western world has changed because there is a lot more of talking about it. Mm-hmm. People like women, especially, you know, they want their seat at the table. So if you talk about developing countries, India, take India as an example. Mm. I don't think we are there yet in terms of women or minorities actually asking for it. It will change for two reasons. It will change. One is the whole economics. And Saudi Arabia is a good example where, you know, the whole economics changed the fact that women could then start driving, right? So the whole economy will change or will ask for more diversity. And the second part is how much of the minorities, how many of those minorities can actually stand up to it? And I tell you, as a girl who grew up in India, the whole desire my parents put on us, you know, despite the fact that we should study and we should have our own careers and jobs, the whole guardrail that was put on us was, you know, get married. Right. So I think it's a societal thing. So society needs to change. And I would say it's more the iteration of both society and economy. The more economy demands, the more society changes. The more society changes, the more economy demands.
And you think that countries like India are moving in the right direction? Because I know there are laws in India also which say that in every board, there must be at least one woman representative. And that's actually quite a shame because that's half the population and you still say we should have only one. But I'd love to get your perspective on, are we heading in the right direction or much more needs to be done?
Much more needs to be done. You know, the research says if you go at the pace at which we are going, even to close the gender pay gap, it's going to take 200 years. I don't think we are ready to wait 200 years.
Yeah.
So if you, when at the start you said, you know, most of your viewers are under 34, ask the millennials. They're not ready to wait for 200 years.
Right.
So a lot more needs to be done. I think there are a couple of things that needs to happen. One is governments are becoming more conscious. So India, yes, you are right, 50% of the population is women, but at least you are asking for one, which is great step forward. The second is, you know, we need to ask for it. So when I say we, the minorities that are excluded needs to actually stand up and ask for it. And I think this is where the whole, what I was telling you about the whole balance between, you know, the give and the ask needs to actually meet up. But I really don't think we can wait 200 years to close the gap.
Absolutely. And there's no reason to. I mean, I think the world will lose if they wait 200 years for the half of the population, which I believe has significantly better work ethics than the other half. You know. So, but that's my personal view. And I've said this all along in my entire life. But Reshma, moving on, you are a strong supporter for women in STEM. And you are actively supporting them. I'd love to understand, what are you doing to support them?
So two things. One is, like, you know, the start of the career. And I say this also as someone who had a STEM education and have thought like a million times before getting into a STEM career. And if you see the research, women are more than men in STEM education. But when it comes to the careers that they choose, they actually drop out of STEM careers. So I do a lot of university talks. First, I enjoy talking to the young minds. Second, I also do these talks simply because of what women to girls who are actually choosing STEM education to choose STEM careers. So this is a first step, like, you know, getting women into the pipeline. The second, I would say, is more actively supporting. So whether it's within the organization or outside of the organization, actively supporting both the organizations and women to rise up. So there is a lot, it's merely a myth in my point of view to say, think that there are not even enough women in tech. Or women in engineering or technology or any of that STEM fields. I think it's fundamentally, there is not enough women in leadership. So the second part of my work is also like get more women into those decision-making positions so that we can help other women who needs to get there.
Interesting. So I'm now going to move to the last segment of our conversation. All my viewers and listeners love to get to know my guest a little better. So I have three or four questions for you personally. Let me start by asking you that you had such a successful life so far, and I'm sure there's so much more ahead. What would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
Three milestones. Okay, the first milestone I would say, you know, I grew up in rural India. So like we used to carry water from the well. There was taps were like, you know, very, very unheard of. There was no electricity in the sense that, and you know, the Indian word of that, the power cuts. So I literally studied a lot of my evenings under candlelight. Mm-hmm. So my first milestone of what changed my perspective towards what is possible was moving to a city, to Chennai for my studies. This really changed the perspective of, there is a whole lot out there. Correct. So the exposure part. This is one of the things that completely changed my outlook towards everything. Mm-hmm. The second is marriage. So I married my college sweetheart. And why I say that is because, you know, I think we underestimate the power of a spouse in your career building. Mm-hmm. So this is something that I would say has been extremely pivotal for me in terms of how I built my career. I have a wonderfully understanding spouse and, you know, making the choice of marriage, mm-hmm. I would say, was the other milestone. Mm-hmm. And the third, I would say, is my current role. Because when I decided to leave ABB, you know, which is one of the world's largest technology companies in that sense, this was a very thought out decision in terms of moving into a space that is at an intersection of people and technology. And I can only tell you that 12 months into the role, I'm actually happy I made the decision. So this actually opens up a whole lot of avenues for me in that sense, just in terms of the thought process. I don't say it in terms of career, job, nothing, just in terms of thought process.
Fascinating. So two more questions for you. My next question is on failure. And Reshma, now you are in the people business from a tech business. I've often said that South Asians, Indians, even Chinese, our parents never teach us it's okay to fail. We're always taught first in line, first in class, better marks, et cetera, et cetera. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns, especially in North India, in places like Delhi, where my car must be right in front, whatever happens. Yet we fail, we learn. My question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from your mistakes?
So, you know, I think it's what you said is very right. I think it's a social conditioning of what failure or mistakes are. And I have to say that I have really reconditioned myself. This is one of the reasons why I can't tell you what my mistakes or failures are. It's more about learning. So, you know, one of the things, again, for your viewers, if you have not read, please do read Carol Dweck's book, Mindset, which fundamentally changed my life. It's all about the growth mindset. So how do you actually learn with things? And there are so many learnings like on a daily basis. So I can't really pinpoint and say, you know, this is one. The only thing, again, because I'm also in that industry, one of the things that I can tell you is rejections. So a lot of people, especially with the great resignations, great reshuffle that we spoke about, a lot of us want the better job. But how do we handle rejections? We are not good at handling rejections. So the for me, the key takeaway for myself as well has been that, you know, it doesn't matter the number of times you are rejected. It's about having that focus. So when I wanted this job as well, it's not a question of, you know, did I get the first job I applied to? Did I get the first conversation? Did it convert into a contract? No, it's not about that. It's about how many times you try. But you need to have that focus and don't get bogged down by rejections.
Fascinating. And my last question to you, and this is for the many, many young people who will listen to our conversation. What would your advice be, Reshma, to a young individual who's starting off on her or his career?
Yeah, so this is the same advice I would give to my, you know, 20 years back self. It's about learning. I think there is no dearth, and especially if you look at the times that we are living in, the information age, there is no dearth of knowledge. There is no dearth of information. There is no dearth of accessibility. Just go out, just learn. You know, and don't look at it as rejections, failures, mistakes. You know, the whole negative connotation should be out of our mind. And I say this also like as someone who grew up in rural India. And as I said, Chennai was like mind-blowing for me. And then I moved to Delhi, which was another of those mind-blowing experience for me. You know, this is what exposure can do. So the more you expose yourself to new things, the more you learn, the more you actually understand your own potential.
Very interesting. Reshma, on that note, thank you so much. It's been such a privilege speaking to you. Thank you for talking to me about the ADECO group, about all the incredible work you're doing, about how the entire human resource management and search firms are beginning to change as a result of all the current challenges. And thank you for talking to me about some of your own values and all the stuff that you've been doing. Thank you again and good luck.
You're someone I admire so much, you know, especially with the impressive career path that you have had. I don't know if I should say career path or the portfolio career, which is like the ambition of, you know, everyone of at least my age group. So you're someone I respect and admire a lot. And I have to say, like, I'm so, so privileged, blessed to be here with you, Ashutosh.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that comment. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. A platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.